This is Purple Radio on demand.
Hello and welcome back to Who's Up Podcasts. I'm Ollie and I'm here with Willow.
Hello.
Lottie.
We haven't said this three times.
And Louie.
Hello.
How many attempts at podcasting recording have you seen today?
Three.
Anyway, we're going to be discussing Flesh Week, which is The Rebel Flesh, The Almost People, and A Good Man Goes to War.
I love Flesh.
Before anything else, spoiler warning, we are going to be spoiling these episodes. If you haven't watched these episodes, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast, but you know, you do you. I'm not going to judge your life choices.
They might just really like our voices.
Maybe they do, and that is valid. We have very lovely voices.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Anyway, So, first of all, we're going to be discussing The Rebel Flesh. The 11th Doctor, Amy Pond and Rory Williams find themselves in a castle on an island in the near future, where the flesh, shape-shifting, programmable organic matter with the ability to take the shape of human beings, is grown. When the castle is struck by a solar flare, the humans find themselves cut off from their flesh doppelgangers who begin to run wild.
I hate it when that happens.
So, what do we think of this episode?
I thought it was okay.
I really like it, yeah.
I haven't seen it in a while and I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoy it. Lorna seemed to have a vendetta against it. Shout out to Lorna.
Hi, Lorna.
But I, which is fair enough, I thoroughly enjoy this episode. I love the characters and the themes it explores, and it's very thought-provoking.
Yeah, I think it's probably the weakest of the three that we're going to be discussing, but that's not saying a lot because the others are really good. I really liked it.
I agree. Yeah.
Whenever I sort of rewatch any of Matt Smith's episodes, I never sort of go for Rebel Flesh or Almost People. I never go for Rebel Flesh at all, really. Which I don't know what that says about it.
I think it's a very... I think partly because it's a very thought-provoking episode and also because it's a very dark episode and spooky in a lot of ways. That makes it... It's not an easy rewatch.
Yeah, I just... I don't know. On first watch, when I first watched it, I think I was a bit distracted by the CGI.
That's fair.
It is famous for not having great CGI.
I think the direction is quite interesting. There are parts where, like, Jennifer will click her fingers and point at something, and that's supposedly a scene, and then, like, the Doctor yelling at the camera.
Yeah, it's choices.
It's a little bit weird.
There are sort of choices for direction with that.
That being said, I still...
Join the revolution!
I still remember the first time I saw the episode, like, when it was coming out, and the cold open was genuinely terrifying. Mm. Like, that is so well done, if you don't know what the kind of premise of the episode is.
Yeah. I think, as a kid, I never noticed bad CGI. Like, it literally wasn't something on my radar. I was just like, okay, that's that.
Yeah,
I notice it now, but I think just, I don't know, because of the way my brain is, I sort of... don't care too much. Like, I sort of just look past it.
And it's Doctor Who. You know, you can't expect great CGI.
I didn't watch this as a kid. I think I must have missed it on that week. And we didn't have sort of iPlayer. Or I wasn't aware of iPlayer to sort of go back and watch it or anything. So when I finally did watch it, I think, must have been about 13 maybe or something. And that's when you do start noticing certain things.
That's when I was first watching Doctor Who. That's a lie. It was age of 10. Never mind. Sorry.
You liar.
Ollie lies.
How dare
you? Speaking of lying, the Doctor lies at the very beginning of this episode. They're going to land on the island, but the Doctor's trying to deposit Amy and Rory off for fish and chips.
Deposit!
And...
Hold on, love. I'm just going to deposit myself off to the post office. I'll be back in a minute.
I don't know why I worded it like that.
It's wonderful.
But yeah, I think it's interesting how much the Doctor is clearly keeping from Amy and Rory in this episode. Mm. It's explained in A Good Man Goes to War of, like, he couldn't have been sure that Kavari and Chapter weren't listening. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting dynamic going in that the Doctor knows about the flesh and knows about doppelgangers and things but isn't telling Amy and Rory. And it adds a slight extra dimension that most episodes don't have, I think.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of the episodes where you get that the most. Like, there's always kind of, like, little things where the Doctor knows more than he, like, says to the companions or whatever. Mm. This is, like, one of the really major ones. Like, they are being deceived on why they're there at all. And, yeah, I think this is the most that you get on that point, apart from Impossible Astronaut, I guess.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's on a whole other level.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I think we get introduced to the flesh It's the, you know, there are people strapped into the machines, and the people we meet are flesh. And then, of course, the solar flare separates them, and we get, you know, everyone is duplicated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting, I think, seeing how... it's so interesting seeing how the flesh, like how the humans interact with the flesh, because I love, one of my favorite aspects about this episode is how I think fundamentally the flesh are also just as real.
Mm.
And I find it interesting talking to other people that a lot of people will still refer to the real one and the flesh one when the point is they're both real. And it's really hard. Yeah. It's really, really hard for sort of people to grasp the idea that both are valid and neither is the original or the fake. They're both just as real as each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's very, very interesting.
Yeah, I also like the part where one of them, I can't remember which one, was complaining that they'd like stolen the lives when actually they had given the flesh their lives. You know, there's nothing like malicious or, you know, anything about it. It's the people have, you know, chosen to create these doppelgangers without any kind of consideration for what that might mean.
Yes, exactly. It's an ethical nightmare.
Imagine how many sack forms will be here.
But yeah, I love a Doctor Who episode where the villains aren't really villains.
Yeah.
You could argue that the humans are the villains. I mean, in a sense, like Cleves is clearly a villain. At least at the start, she's being bad by killing the flesh.
Yes. Murder and, is bad, actually.
Such a hot take.
But then, of course, Jennifer Lucas, like the flesh version of her, sort of becomes evil herself because she is very much just like, kill all the humans.
Yeah.
But most of them, human and gangers, are just trying to survive.
Mm.
They are just trying to survive one another and are sure the others are going to kill them.
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting dynamic.
There was a very interesting parallel of the whole us and them and the fact that both groups were doing it, thus showing the sort of split that was going. But I did find that it was getting a bit confusing now. Is the fact that they are literally doppelgangers, they look alike.
Yeah.
Thinking, like, what is going on? So Jen was sort of evil, but then like she sort of warmed up a bit, and then she was evil again. And I was I was not exactly confused, but sort of trying to keep track of what was going on in the episode. Do you find that a bit, particularly in the second part where there's more stuff going on?
I definitely found it took me a few rewatches to fully grasp what was going on, but I think that's partly because I first watched this when I was 10 or 11 and I didn't have a good grasp of plots anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say how much I'd have understood if I'd first watched it now.
Yeah.
What was really confusing to me, not like the doppelganger bit, but a certain scene that happened in Almost People with just like, I mean, I take Rebel Flesh and Almost People as like one episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where the walls had eyes?
Yeah.
I think I think what that was just the flesh had put those there like as a judgment to accuse, as the Doctor says, them.
I see your point.
Oh, no.
I hate you.
How could you make that worse? That was impressive.
Yeah, it was really eye-opening.
Oh, dear.
I think speaking of particular scenes that were confusing, and again, I think this was in Almost People, but I struggle to, you know, remember which one was which, where there's the two Jennifers fighting, and then, like, spoiler alert, they're both flesh. Like, I wasn't sure when that happened, because there's the whole thing about this like pile of like still alive discarded flesh, but that whole pile is very different to like a fully formed functioning Jennifer, so I kind of didn't really get when that was supposed to have happened.
I assume that just off screen, while other things were happening, Jennifer went to the flesh vat and just made a whole new clone of herself in the same way the Doctor did.
Okay, yeah, fair.
That
enough.
Was my assumption.
Yeah, I forgot that the Doctor had a doppelganger without being like strapped into the.
Yeah, because it seems as if that's something that can happen. It's just not something that does happen, like for obvious reasons.
Yeah,
this episode does do something though, which I think I'm just coming to hate more and more. I see it, and it happened in Wild Boo Yonder. It happened in other such things, such as like the chase, and even, yes, I'll say it, the conquest of Sontar, the whole, oh, it's them, it's me, no, I'm the real person. And, oh, it just gets really annoying after a while. So, but I think it was interesting seeing the twist with Jennifer.
See,
because they were both. They were both.
Mm. I think I don't mind it. I think it's fun. I think it would annoy me.
Yeah, but it's done too much, I feel.
The thing is, though, I feel like when I think about cases of this being done, I mean, I've not seen the chase, but cases that you bring up, Conquest of Sontar is sort of the classic one. Wild Beyond sort of throws in on its head with the sort of human-sounding answer is the wrong one, which I think is fun. And also, they don't work it out. The not things sort of just reveal themselves.
Mm.
And in this one, there isn't so much of that. Like, the Jennifer thing, they're both flesh. So I think they're all different twists on it. So for me, that means I don't really mind it. But I also understand why. Like, I totally get it being annoying.
And I feel like with the others, there's some aspect of it being a disguise. Whereas that isn't really present here because that is just who they are.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I can sort of briefly summarize the chase for you, Ollie. So, spoilers for the chase. Bradley Walsh hosts this game show.
I had a feeling I knew where that was going.
You know me too well.
Thank you, Lottie. Thank you.
I will say, I always... It, one of the things I like about this episode, because of the way it makes me think, is I really like how I always find, I imagine what I would do and what my flesh self would do in that situation, because the flesh self is also just me. Mm-hmm. And I just know that when Cleves kills one of the gangers and then they all run away, and you know Jennifer's going, yeah, this that'll happen to us all if we trust you. I know the flesh version of me, I would panic and freeze and stay there and probably then get killed by Cleves.
Oh.
That's what would happen.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
Unless the doctor was like, no more killing, and then maybe it would save the day, me not running away.
He does say that a lot. Until he commits genocide.
Yeah.
No more killing unless I say so.
Yeah. I think me and my ganger would get on. I think a lot of people would not get on with their gangers. I know I would get a lot of social anxiety. I'd be like, do I really look like that? Are my mannerisms really like that? But I wouldn't... I don't think I would hate the ganger.
Yeah.
I would just be like...
You'd be like, this is a reflection of myself.
It's a tool to overanalyze yourself.
Yes, exactly.
Mm.
It would, you know, I would... I think I'd find a whole sort of truckload of new insecurities. Do you think you guys would get on with your flesh counterparts?
That's a really good question, because I feel like it's something that's so difficult to think about.
Mm.
Like, I think, because I was thinking about this a little bit when I was watching the episode, and I definitely don't think there would be any of that animosity that there is in Rebel Flesh, Almost People. But I just don't know if we would get on. I feel like it would be kind of beneficial for both of us to just kind of go off and do whatever separately.
Yeah.
Knowing, I think overthink about it. If I had a ganger, they'd want to probably do exactly what I want to do.
Mm.
And if people be like, oh, but I could get so much stuff done. Can you imagine, like, we team up and stuff like that? Yeah, but if I wanted to do my, like, uni work, then that ganger would also want to maybe do the uni work. Or if I really wanted to do some writing, and I said, okay, ganger, I do some writing, you do uni work, the gang will be like, hang on, why don't I do the writing and you do the work?
Yeah, it's not like some kind of robot butler situation.
I'm not a robot butler, I'm me.
I think there's, I don't know if you guys have read Calvin and Hobbes, but it's a really good series of comics. Mm. It's they were newspaper comics from I don't know how long ago, but they were like Calvin is like a 6-year-old kid, and
oh yeah, Hobbes is a cat.
Hobbes is a tiger. I'm not going to explain
Hobbes
the whole premise of Calvin and Hobbes.
I was worried for us.
Get it right, Lottie. Get it right.
So sorry to our dear listeners.
But there's a lot of things which are sort of implied to be. There's a lot of comic strips which are sort of sci-fi, but it's implied to be in Calvin's imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is where he duplicates himself and he's running around with, like, 7 different duplicates of him, and I think it plays the much more comedic side of the ideas of the Rebel Flesh, because I think there's a lot of comedy that you can do, but you can't do it in an episode like the Rebel Flesh.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give a spoiler warning for the TV show Invincible. If you haven't seen it, maybe skip ahead a bit.
Oh, sorry, but spoiler warning for Calvin and Hobbes.
Wow, Ollie, you just spoiled the entire WhoSock audience for Calvin and Hobbes.
There's a set of villains called the Mauler Twins, who essentially are clones of themselves. But the question is, which is the original? And they play into this whole thing of, well, you're the clone. No, you're the clone. And I feel that that's probably what's going to happen with me, where there'll be such a disagreement of who is the real person. I mean, is it? It's not exactly Ship of Theseus. It's more Ship of Doctor Who. Yeah, you build one in the spirit. Build another ship in the spirit of Theseus. Is that Theseus as well? I'm also reminded of, again, this is a very big spoilery thing, Star Trek Enterprise, spoilers for that. There's one episode where a character is fatally injured and they can only save him by... they can't save him. They need his They need his memory and skills to work on the engine. So they create an artificial version of him that will grow for a few days and then die after about a month or so. They can at least save the original character, but the question is, can you save the simulation character? He knows he's going to die, but he has all the memories. He has all the experiences. I remember this. I remember that. But you're saying that that's not my real life. And it was feeding into the whole thing of this. It's a fascinating argument we got here. Is it okay that Doctor Who just sort of goes, oh yeah, so then the characters go through the door and there's a big press conference and then we're going to get on with the next episode because it's a cliffhanger?
Yeah. I mean,
should Doctor Who focus on it a bit more?
Thing is, I think it's focused on enough in the episode. And I think the message of the episode is that the gangers are as real as the original people, which is, in my sort of philosophical standpoint, I do agree with that. But I do think that's addressed very heavily in the episode. I don't really know how much more they should have gone into it, unless it was left as an ambiguous message.
I think this kind of discussion is making me realize how weirdly similar this plot point is to the Family of Blood, and whether John Smith is kind of like the real person.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of, because I was saying yesterday, oh, this does remind me of something that we watched a while ago. Because it's the whole thing of you wake up one day and you're told your life is a lie.
Yeah.
Not entirely, but more like you were just created, you have all these memories, and you're told your life isn't just a lie, it's got to be decommissioned.
Yeah. I think one of the things that bothers me about this episode is I wish it wasn't the... I wish there was at least one person where both human and ganger survived. Because it feels a bit too convenient for me that at least one of each died. Like, for instance, there's no reason the Flesh Cleaves had to die. And that's especially interesting as the human Cleaves was the one who was the most aggressive to the Flesh. And having them have to work through that and going in together to the press conference would have been really interesting.
Yeah.
And I think I'm glad that we had some humans and some Flesh survive, but also, and I know this would have been very controversial, but I wish the Flesh Doctor had survived.
Yes, no, same. I was thinking that because I was, when we were watching the episode, I couldn't remember exactly how it ended. And so I was thinking, what if they lied about the shoes? And so then, but then obviously you see that it is the Flesh Doctor, you know, you see him kind of melt into flesh.
Yes.
But I think it would have been really interesting, both for what you can do with that in the future, and also just kind of to underline the message of the story, to be like, these are the same person.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, two doctors, that sounds weird. Why would there be two doctors at the same time?
But yeah, I think it's such a, like, it almost feels like, the only reason I can think of that you shouldn't do that, besides just, like, it is either because the writer doesn't really believe the message or because the audience wouldn't really believe the message.
The but guy who wrote this also wrote Fear Her.
Yeah, I'm aware. And I'm...
Wrong episode, Chloe.
It's interesting because Fear Her is such a bad episode. Sorry.
I'm a proponent of Fear Her.
Fair
mostly
enough.
Nostalgia. On a rewatch, that episode is bad. But I still, like...
You are attacking kids.
Yeah, I think that just the first 10 minutes is good.
And that's fair.
Then you just leave it there and walk away.
I think there's not much actively, like, offensively bad. It's just forgettable.
Yeah.
Whereas this episode, I love. Mm. I think there's some... Yeah. One thing I really like is how the characters all feel very distinct and different in how they interact in the human and Ganger versions. Like, obviously, Ganger Jennifer goes completely off the rails. Human Cleaves is the one antagonizing, and then Ganger Cleaves is like, what's the point of this war? And she's the one who's most reluctant. Mm. And then the others are sort of, the humans and Gangers are going along with what they're being told, just sort of because they've got no choice, not because that's what they actually want.
Yeah.
And I particularly love, I can't remember his name, but the guy who's like a dad.
Yeah.
Who he's like, he has the whole breakdown of like, I'm the fake, I'm not real. And then the human one dies and he has to live his life.
Mm.
And, you know, accept that he can be real.
I'm still on the call, Daddy.
I do like the character of Rory in this. There's a lot more agency given to him where he's like, you know what, I'm going to find Jennifer, I'm going to see what I can do. It does lead to a lot of the problems in this story. However, I think that's part of his character, that he is sort of being very
He tries to help
hopeful.
People to a fault.
Yes, exactly what I was going to say, compassionate to a fault.
Yes.
And I think it gives a lot more motivation to what goes on in the next episode, because the fact that this ends on a cliffhanger, just like, all of these episodes that we're going to talk about end on a cliffhanger.
Oh, they do, don't they?
Mm.
Yeah.
What I'd say was that it's interesting to see Rory's character here, knowing that he is going to be with the Doctor just after, because Amy sort of melts away into gooey flesh. What would a Doctor Rory adventure be like?
I feel like chaotic. So chaotic.
So in some sense, I think Amy maybe grounds them.
It's sort of like, I don't know, physics. So immovable object meets unstoppable. Is that the right one?
Yeah.
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 Whereas Rory would be like, hang on, why are we doing this? Whereas other companions, such as like Amy or Clara or something, would probably just go like, hey, where are we going? Let's go. Where Rory would ask a lot more questions and be a lot more concerned. And I feel like the Doctor would be like, you're pulling off
just
my groove, mate.
Fun.
You're pulling off my groove, mate.
Yeah.
I do love seeing his kindness in this episode. And he's the only one besides the Doctor who from the start is like, and he gets the language wrong a little bit, but he is like trying his best to be compassionate to humans and Gangers.
And it's always the sentiment that matters more than the language anyway.
Yes. So yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's one thing that I find really, really interesting as like a kind of there's the moment where Cleaves refers to a Ganger as it and then refers to like in the Doctor's words, a glorified cattle prod as she. I find it interesting how I'm trying to think how to put this. I find it interesting how like that logic like fully makes sense. But then I feel like people, I think when it comes to, I'm going to say trans people for an example, I think people often, like there are people who will misgender trans people because wrongly in their minds they think they're being technically correct. And then they will refer to, say, a car as she or a boat as she. I find it really interesting that, you know, they'll fail to see that logic, but then in this episode, when it's calling a gang it's like no one questions that as being correct logic.
Yeah.
I just thought that was something I'd bring up.
Yeah.
Interesting point.
I do think that is interesting, especially since this episode kind of predated the massive surge in the like animosity towards trans people.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite a nice insight into just how people think and how people use their language to kind of attack or invalidate people based on whatever it is that they think is correct.
And no one questions in this scene that the pronouns are important. I think that's an interesting point to bring up.
Yeah.
I also think when it comes to sort of bias and prejudice, like I think it's really cleverly shown with the flesh versus the real Doctor and Amy's bias against the flesh Doctor. And I think it's a really clever way of showing how people have such subconscious bias and people who think that they're not, say, I don't know, racist, sexist, homophobic or whatever. It's very interesting how, like, you know, the Doctor says, are you sure you're not prejudiced? And Amy goes, no, I know. But obviously she is prejudiced, and it's a really clever way of showing how people can be prejudiced without realizing it.
Yeah, and I really like that they didn't just kind of have that and leave it up to the audience to kind of decide whether that was prejudice or whether she just had this innate feeling, but they kind of drove it home with the fact that she was wrong.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. I really enjoy that. I think that's really, really interesting.
Mm.
Just going back to Rory, talking about Rory, I think we've missed... we definitely didn't miss it while we were watching along. We missed a certain scene of Rory. It was like, I think this needs someone strong to turn this wheel.
Yeah.
Rory just goes, time to bring out the big guns.
Yeah.
And does the sort of
It's an interesting dialogue,
a bit interesting bit of it's like you were saying in the beginning, there's interesting bits of direction in this episode.
Yeah.
I think you could justify that with the fact that, like, a lot of Rory's character is kind of being diminished.
Yeah.
And so he has that chance to...
Finally, I can grow as a character.
I can do it.
I'm human. I have a handprint.
He's growing as a character.
in some sense, the way I see that is, in that scene, Jennifer is...
manipulating.
She's using misogyny and... misogyny's bad, but like she's not necessarily wrong for using it, if you know what misogyny's bad. I
get so many hot takes in this podcast.
In some sense, Rory, like, in my mind, based on his tone, and I might be missing things entirely here, in my mind, when Rory's doing the sort of
big guns thing,
he seems to me like he's doing that sarcastically,
carrying on with the bit or something.
Mm. Yeah, so. Yeah, I don't know.
Doesn't feel like he believes it.
No, yeah,
yeah. It's a little bit of an uncomfortable bit of dialogue, but I don't know that either of them is actually being
misogynist. For some reason, I don't think Rory thinks their guns are arms. Or arms are guns. I sometimes struggle with flipping words around in sentences.
Lottie, you're right. This isn't your Ganga.
I don't know.
And the real Lottie is sort of cruising away in
Caribbean. I am the real Lottie.
How do you know?
I have her memories.
How do you know?
This kind of the flip of the words has just made me realize that you do call guns arms and you do call arms guns.
Oh, you do, don't you?
Yeah.
I never realized
that. I wonder if that's like where the kind of like gun show.
What do you call legs then? Maybe. Tanks.
I don't think anyone.
Swords!
Break a sword.
Get out your cutlasses! We're doing the can-can!
Now I want a pirate with a peg leg that is just
a sword.
Yeah.
Peg sword. Well. Didn't they like hide the sword in the peg leg?
I mean, there's
also one thing we've not talked about much yet, besides like Amy's bias, is the Flesh Doctor, which is really interesting. It must have been an absolute nightmare to film, but I really, really enjoy that dynamic of having two doctors and that being the cliffhanger of the Rebel Flesh.
Yeah. Imagine Matt Smith looking through the script.
Apparently,
like,
you've asked me
to do this again.
It was pretty easy to, because the doctor would just complete the other doctor's sentences, and that's just what happened. So I think in that way, it's good. The idea of two doctors working together, whether it be the same doctor or a different doctor or a different face of the doctor, it's always fun to have. However, there is, of course, that scene with the doctor. Is it the Flesh Doctor? Is it the real doctor? And Amy, where they were just outside sort of discussing... What were they discussing exactly?
Doctor things.
Doctor things, yeah. Yeah. And it was quite an intense scene because the Doctor sort of fights Amy somewhat. Mm.
Yeah. I think especially with the, I think it was Rory at this point, where the Doctor's being quite aggressive and it's like the ring, which was also a bit weird. But, and like you think that, you know, while you're watching it, that's the Flesh Doctor who's kind of aligning himself with the Flesh. Whereas then you realise that's the actual, well, I don't know when the switch occurred, to be fair. But I think that was the real Doctor just being weirdly aggressive to Rory, which feels unfair.
I think the point was the fact that he was pretending to be on the Flesh side, so he needed to be
aggressive. Yeah.
He needed to seem like a villain, I guess, in order to convince the Flesh that he was on their side.
Nothing's more villainous than ring.
I
always get terrified when the phone call rings.
I mean, I do, to be fair.
No, yeah, to yeah.
Social anxiety.
Whoa.
This episode of the Who Talk podcast was sponsored by Social Anxiety.
I thought you were going to say by Connection Terminated.
By Connection Terminated.
The brand new
Purple Radio
stuff of Purple Radio Drama.
But
Purple Radio.
podcast.
It definitely makes me uncomfortable, the scene where the Doctor basically throws Amy against a wall, because it's like, in my mind, the only way I can headcanon that's makes that acceptable is that he's hit with like a sort of psychic sort of wave. And so he's sort of in some sense not physically in control of himself. But I don't think I should have to come up with that headcanon. That's not something.
I mean, if you really want to find an explanation, you could say, so when the Flesh Doctor was first created, when he was struggling with the past regenerations, this was him just struggling with the twin dilemma.
But that was the real Doctor, though, because Amy says to that Doctor that you invited us to see your death, and the Doctor knows after that episode that that's happened. So that was the real Doctor. That was after the switch.
Yes, okay. Well, I tried.
Yeah, fair enough. I think I find it interesting how he was much more affected than the Flesh Doctor. I think I interpret that as being a Time Lord, he has a lot of innate psychic abilities, whereas the Flesh Doctor maybe hadn't quite developed that yet because the Flesh wasn't advanced enough. But I do find it interesting. Actually, I quite dislike the idea of the Flesh itself has memory and the Flesh itself wants to do things, or you can remember things from when your flesh clones died.
The thing is, I adored that. I thought that was such a superb idea because you've got the idea, like, not exactly the flesh itself, but when the flesh uses the sort of memories of someone else, there is some sort of that there's a longevity of memory somewhere, that sort of residual thing of, well, I died and then I died again. Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Oh, nuts.
I think the reason I don't like it is because it slightly plays against the idea that the gangers are the same person as the humans, because it creates a kind of innate difference. Whereas I think the point is that they were the same up to the point of the split in the solar flare.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
It's getting too meta for me to sort of keep up.
Yeah, I'm feeling like I'm getting lost. However, going back to with you were talking about the kind of difficulty with having the two doctors, I feel like when I was watching that, especially with the kind of first section where they're all in the room with the vat, and it's kind of introducing that there are two doctors, it was weirdly reminiscent of the 50th with Smith and Tennant doing the whole Zygon plan memory wipe thing. And I like that having two doctors in a room together feels the same, even when it's different actors.
Yeah.
I feel like that just kind of like shows the consistency of, you know, playing
it's the
same
doctor. I agree. I really, really like that. I think it's really interesting. But then we've got the end, of course. Amy goes into labor. And
as
you do.
You're pregnant.
And then we have the twist.
Happy birthday.
We get the twist of Amy as the flesh. And having her melt. And that, I think it's a brilliantly executed cliffhanger. And it's really horrifying.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Like, it's genuinely horrifying to imagine, because we see it from Amy's point of view.
Yeah.
Of, you know, she discovers that she is what she was insisting wasn't real this whole time.
Yeah.
And then is melted. Wakes up in an unfamiliar bright white room with a creepy woman, pregnant, about to give birth. That is truly horrifying.
It's also hinted at throughout the two episodes with the doctors telling Amy to breathe.
Yeah. But you only realise in retrospect.
Which I really like. It's the same as the countdown in the Angels episode.
Yes.
Where it's like, that's a bit weird, but you kind of just move past it. It's this small thing. And then when you've got that reveal, it's like, oh my God.
You have these a lot with episodes with flesh in the title.
I'm going to quote Cormac's joke throughout the watch along yesterday of just the doctor saying, "Give birth to Amy."
Yeah. I also like how with this in particular, and also some notable scenes in the next episode, where this horrific trauma just doesn't affect Amy in the next series.
She's fine. Nice if it affected her character development.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, we're going to segue nicely onto A Good Man Goes to War, unless anyone
Such
has any
nice
closing
segue.
Thoughts.
Such a nice
segue. Amy Pond has been taken. She and her baby are prisoner on the asteroid of Demon's Run. The Doctor and Rory must put together a team to take down Madame Kavarian, Colonel Manton, and the Headless Monks, who are hell-bent on one sole purpose, killing the Doctor. Thoughts? General thoughts?
Avengers Assemble could never.
Yes.
So real.
I love the Doctor going around and collecting on his debts. The one thing I wish was it was characters we'd been introduced to before rather than mostly entirely original.
I really like the idea of an Avengers team-up, essentially, that we bring the best, you know, the gang of the Doctor. Oh, no. We're going to bring back Danny Boy from Victory of the Daleks. Captain Avery. Captain Avery from Curse of the Black Spot.
And
three characters who we haven't seen before except for Strax, who was kind of in the Sontaran episode, but a different character.
Well, I don't think that was Strax. That was just a different Sontaran. That's a different Sontaran. Who looked the same.
And then you got the Silurian, which is the same actress who played them in The Hungry Earth. Like, you could have done it a bit better. Supposedly, they were going to bring back Ood Sigma, Jack Harkness, but these are people who we recognize. I mean, if you could, I know I was probably skipping ahead of the head to questions, but if you could have a big Doctor Who team up of random characters, who would it be?
Cherry.
The Doctor, Cherry.
I think at this
the Frog from It's All It Takes You Away.
Why?
Meep.
The Meep.
The Meep.
Clive.
I do like Clive. I do like having characters
Clyde
from
Langer.
Like that era. So like it, you know, it's similar to the opening of the Pandora Opens, brings in loads of characters from Series 5. We've got Van Gogh, we've got Churchill and Bracewell, we've got Liz 10, we've got River.
Yeah.
And I think that's always fun. River.
But they can't really do that halfway through the season.
But they did, they had characters, they could have had more characters from Series 5. Like, I don't know, you could have brought in, I was going to say, no, everyone in Flesh and Stone died.
Yeah. Could have brought in some classic actors. That would have been fun.
That would have been. Thing is, though, I feel like you need to focus on them more.
Well, the Brigadier probably should have been in Series 6. But, of course, in Wedding with River Song, you get that line of, oh, I'm very sorry, the Brigadier died.
Yeah. Rip.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's really fun. It shows the Doctor's sort of the power of the Doctor. I love seeing his rage. Like his companion's taken and he's got this calm rage and he suddenly becomes this terrifying, ominous figure coming around and collecting people and he completely takes down Demon's Run in a fell swoop.
Yeah. What's the blue one called? Dorian?
Yeah. Dorian.
There was a superb scene where the TARDIS arrives and you see the silhouette of the Doctor. Oh no, don't take me.
I'm old
and fat and blue. It was funny, but it's the whole juxtaposition of the Doctor is there. We only see a silhouette. It is horrifying. But also, you've got later on in the scene with the Headless Monks where one of the Headless Monks is the Doctor. I'd say there are quite lots of iconic scenery in this episode, but I wouldn't say it is a good episode. I feel that there are a few holes in that, mainly because of the fact that it is halfway through the season that it's built up to be, oh, it's Madame Kavarian. We don't really know exactly what the villains are. You've got this army that hates the Doctor for some reason, and then they just turn up and they're allied with the Headless Monks. I think it's very disorganized, and yeah, I think that.
I think it's
a good writer goes to a bad place.
That's fair. I think it's
a bad place.
I think it's a brilliant episode in its own right. I think the plot that was built around it could have been constructed better. Like I don't. Like, the explanation for them wanting to kill the Doctor is sort of just a throwaway line in The Time of the Doctor, which I wish that was more addressed, maybe in Wedding of River Song.
I feel that if this was actually a season finale,
it
probably would have been better. However, there is, of course, the whole thing of what actually the season was for. Supposedly, it was supposed to be David Tennant, who was supposed to be with Amy, then in season 5, then get shot on the beach, and that's how the Doctor would have regenerated. I think it would be interesting to see the original Moffat plan for this because, of course, you got what could have happened with like a proper season with Clara because they do that again where they split the season up.
Yeah.
This is merely a few drafts away from, I think, a very good story, but the original drafts are still, I think, a bit valid, i.e. Jack Harkness, i.e. maybe David Tennant for season 5.
then you've just got
Journey's End. I know.
I do think I actually, one thing I really like about this episode is the fact that it's very much, it's playing into a very different structure to what RTD had of having a sort of season finale-esque episode in the middle of the season and as like a big mid-season special. I really like that as a format point and Moffat using that to shake up the format that we know rather than just doing the same thing RTD always did. I love that. Yeah.
What about the twist? Another twist, yes, of Melody Pond.
Spoilers, big on spoilers.
If you've not pond in the Gamma Forest.
If you have not taken heed now, like at the start of the episode, and you have not seen this, and if anyway you've missed out on a big old spoiler, please just sort of.
The word for pond is river, and melody. Why they call it a song? River song. What do we think of the twist?
I like it.
I love it. That blew my mind when I first watched it.
Yeah, I really like it.
You don't connect it.
Although one thing I find quite funny, technically if you think about it, River Song is not actually called River Song because of Melody Pond. It's a bootstrap paradox because in Let's Kill Hitler, the Doctor says that she is River Song and then she sees that she's River Song and she calls herself River Song. And then in Silence of the Library, she calls herself River, introduces herself as River Song, so the Doctor knows her as River Song. So it's just a bootstrap paradox. That name was created.
You named your daughter after your daughter.
Yeah, there are two bootstrap paradoxes in the same name.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
You know?
Yeah, both. Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, Melody Pond and River Song are both bootstrap paradox names. They both came from nowhere.
I do love how just that's. It sort of makes sense for River to be just sort of this enigma type thing, though.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it, personally.
No. I think when she turns up in Big Finish, it's always a case of, oh, I'm not River Song, I'm... And then they come up with this random name, which, you know...
Mrs. Flood?
No.
I'm Lullaby Lake.
That whole thing of...
I'm Lulu Bell.
That's brilliant.
I think it was also good to see River Song as well and sort of going, okay, you know, I can't intervene, but then she'll turn up anyway and go, ah, I remember this cot.
Mm.
And then, of course, ooh, why would she remember the cot?
Mm.
It was there. However, I think when you get to the whole thing of this then leads on to Let's Kill Hitler, which is not the best episode.
No.
I don't mind it, actually.
I really do.
Fair enough.
I feel that the story of River Song gets a bit derailed a bit here. And then, of course, the fact that they never really finish on the whole, oh, you went to my place with the whole, you have a new haircut and a suit, until husbands. So there's a lot of shaking up. And then she turns up in Name of the Doctor.
I like that as a nice little conclusion.
Yeah.
It's the only thing I like about Name of the Doctor. No, there's a couple of things I like about Name.
I like the Whispering Men.
Yeah.
What are they called?
What do they do?
Oh, the Whisper Men, they're brilliant.
Yeah.
They're a good thing. This isn't the Name of the Doctor podcast. There are many good things and many bad things about the Name of the Doctor.
Podcasts. Come on.
But yes.
Look, what we did without choice.
One thing that I do love about this episode is that the Doctor loses.
Yes.
And that's not something that they do very often. It's also something they don't do very often is that this episode is initiated by the Doctor, sort of. Like, the Doctor is going and actively doing this thing rather than landing somewhere and something happening to him. But also, I love that you've got this amazing victorious moment and you've got this adorable moment with the Doctor and Amy and the baby. And upon rewatch, those scenes hurt me so much, knowing that that's going to be taken away and knowing that the victory is false. And that, I think, is really...
It's really
clever
well done.
And brutal writing.
Yeah.
I feel like Matt Smith should be sort of... There should be more appreciation for Matt Smith in this episode.
Mm.
Because the sort of the range of emotions that they have to go... they go through in terms of, like, being all smug about, like, oh, we got you, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
And then going from that to not even, like, within the same sort of... like, within, like, 2 minutes, you have to go from sort of smug, haha, to the whole Colonel Runaway speech where they're getting angrier and angrier and angrier and angrier and sort of having to keep a lid on it as well, which is very, like, it impresses me.
It's an incredible emotional range. I completely agree with you.
And I feel like Matt Smith does get a lot of credit for being able to bring that kind of fury of the Doctor But people usually cite like Rings of Akhtan, but I much prefer that, like Colonel Runaway's speech that you said. I think that's done so well, and it doesn't get enough credit.
Mm. I completely agree. Yeah, it's incredibly heartbreaking. I do find the scene that follows that, I don't know, remember if it directly follows it or not, but I find it quite funny, the scene where they're discussing when Melody began, because it's very, very obvious that that Moffat can't write into the episode, so when did they have sex?
Yeah.
But he needs to imply it.
And then
it's funny how much they dance around the terminology, but he creates comedy out of it with, like, the Doctor being a little bit uncomfortable and trying to dance around it. I think that's very funny.
However, I think the implication of, well, if one is conceived in the Time Vortex, you're a Time Lord, I feel that is a...
I don't think that's what they did.
It must be well, what they
said, because that sort of gave them a head start, and then they said they
they've been working on it.
We've been working beyond the shadows.
Also, to be fair, on first glance...
That was a stretch.
I don't know what I was doing there.
On first glance, the Doctor looks at her DNA and goes, that's human DNA. So it's clear there's just a little bit of Time Lord in there. And it's, I guess, the bit of Time Lord that gives you the ability to regenerate and just...
touch the table!
More lifespan.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of very conflicting lore about how Time Lords actually work.
Mm. Yeah.
Because when you rewatch this after Timeless Child, it's like, what's going on?
I personally don't mind it, because I think having to be super consistent with the lore... shouldn't get in the way of telling a good story.
Yeah, I fully agree.
And I don't think it's a very good explanation for how the Time Lords have regeneration, but I think being able to tell the story of Riversong is more important than that.
That's not to say that lore isn't important.
Yes, it
is. Continuity is important.
Are you seriously saying that no other couple ever...
Hello?
You seem to have lost power.
Can I say that? Can I say that?
I know what you're saying. No, but the point is the people at Demon. The point is the people in Demon's Run were working on Melody's genetics.
They had the weirdest sort of. I don't think they had beds in the tower. They had deck chairs.
The point is that they didn't like she didn't straight out of the gate have the ability to regenerate. That was something the people at Demon's Run worked on.
Yeah,
it's like she had some sort of genetic
foundation.
There was
the potential because of the Time Vortex, and then it was a conscious effort to kind of create her the way that she is.
And also, it's not just, I don't think, her being conceived in the TARDIS, but that Amy and Rory themselves have spent a huge amount of time in the TARDIS and have very complicated relationships with time. Amy grew up with a time crack in her wall.
Yes.
You know, I think that all has an effect.
Mm. Well, you got to expose yourself to the Time Vortex somehow.
What is happening?
I don't know.
Anyway.
What is happening? Where are we going? Where are we?
I'm going to jump from the end of the episode to the beginning of the episode. Rory's cool.
Rory is cool.
That scene with Rory and the Cybermen, on a rewatch, it's not as good as I remember, but it's still one of my favourite scenes in Doctor Who. Because it's just, it gives him that moment of being this kind of hero.
Yeah, and he is so, so cool doing it.
Yeah.
Rory is so often overlooked.
Yeah.
But that is one of the most memorable moments of Rory.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think it shows that Arthur Darvill can be that kind of serious, you know.
I think outside of RTD's era, the writers often overlook even the main companion.
Mm.
And Rory's a secondary companion. And so he gets overlooked even more.
Yeah.
And I love, in Rebel Flesh and Almost People and A Good Man Goes to War, he doesn't get overlooked. He has a major, major role to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really, really like that. And I love him leading the battle at the end. I think it's a great battle. And I love a lot of the execution of the final scene with the reveal. I love how it starts off with no music. And it mirrors the Zygon inversion speech in a lot of ways. Because it starts with no music when sort of River appears, and it feels so much more real and so much more grounded and authentic. And then when it gets more emotional and the music comes in from a lack of music. I think it makes it the music all the more impactful when it does come in.
Yeah.
Mm.
I love that.
Welcome to silence. I love that. More impactful when the music comes in.
Do we have any closing thoughts on A Good Man Goes to War?
Great episode.
My good man.
Will
I go to war?
Oh, the Headless Monks.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I passed the table.
As hinted with the whole Captain Jack thing, supposedly there's the whole thing of, well, why is he the face of Bo? Spoilers. And then
usually they come before the statement.
And of course, his head.
No, yeah.
Would Captain Jack get his head chopped off? I think originally that's what's supposed to happen, but as usual, one must headcanon imply. That's probably why Captain Jack.
Headcanon.
Or should I say, dead? I don't know.
Yeah, I think the Headless Monks are a really fun concept, and I would love to see them in Doctor Who again.
I really wish.
Particularly, there's the part where Dorian goes like, "Oh, it's the attack prayer," and they're going,
oh.
Why do they have lightning-y swords?
I love it.
Why
I think
don't they have lightning-y swords? Really
cool. I don't understand. I'm not
How
saying
else
it's
are
bad,
they
going to
cut the bread, Louis?
They're just cool. They're just cool, like, space things.
We must do the bread prayer.
The bread prayer.
The bread prayer.
Bread. Bread. Bread.
I do like the implication there that all of the prayers are the same, and you just judge based on scenario and
you
what
know,
they're
it's
trying
context,
to do.
You know,
yeah.
It's context. Attack prayer.
Because they're probably attacking.
Anyway, I'm going to move on to questions now. Joseph wants to know, how many of you is the optimum number to live your life? I'm going to say one, because it would create such a load of inconveniences to have a flesh doppelganger of me.
Yeah,
just because of how busy I've been recently, I'm going to say like five. Because I would love to just be able to do all the things that I've signed up for.
Three.
Yeah.
So when someone says, how many have you seen?
How many Louis have you seen today?
For goodness sake.
Oh, dear.
Three. I think one, because I wouldn't want to get in my own way.
Yeah. It would also be a nightmare for friendships. Like, how are your friends?
But think how easy conversations recording would be.
Yeah,
because then we could, like, have, you know, multiple voices going on at once.
We can never get through a podcast when it's us three together without mentioning it, can we?
Lorna wants to know. Sorry, I am trying to get fast because I always try to keep these podcasts under an hour. If you had the chance to give any politician an inescapable nickname, like Colonel Runaway, which one and what would it be?
I mean, we've already got Captain Hindsight already as nicknamed, so I don't think we can top that.
I also feel like that's a really good question that I can't justify with an answer that doesn't take under half an hour to come up with.
I did have one for Margaret Thatcher in the social... In the Gartic Phone Social, but I can't say it on the podcast because it includes an expletive.
Ah.
I mean, that is appropriate for Margaret Thatcher.
Sure. Fill in the blank.
Bertie wants to know, what would be the first thing you did with the flesh version of you?
High five.
That's a good one. I would probably just start talking about Doctor Who.
Immediately.
I feel like I would probably just like prod their face to see how the flesh feels, because I don't know, like, it looks like it would feel a bit like jelly. So I'd be interested.
Sort of side note, how did they sort of make that sort of jelly thing? Do you think they made it out of yogurt? Is it a big old pettifaloo?
It's a big tub of yogurt and you just sprinkle some veins in.
Big tub. No, it's
were
a
they veins?
It's
were
a
they veins or
it's
hair?
A muller corner. It's
oh dear.
You know, you pour the little the strings.
Well,
in.
I wouldn't eat my flesh, fellow, if that's what you're saying.
Another hot take.
Oh, gosh.
Cannibalism.
You
not
wouldn't
great.
Cannibalize you.
I must say, I think I would get quite frustrated talking with my flesh version because I'm like, oh, I've got this really fun fact about Doctor Who. I already know I'm you.
Let's go on the internet and find out more facts about Doctor Who. We found out the same things because we weren't on the same website because we are the same person.
You would start to like diverge over time, like become more different people. But Bertie said, what's the first thing you did?
Yeah, high five. And then, you know, because we use the same hand and our hand-eye coordination isn't amazing, we'd immediately slap each other in the face.
Cormac wants to know, is the Doctor a good man, and are the events of A Good Man Goes to War a war? I would argue actually no to both.
Mm.
Well, no. I would argue the Doctor is being a good man, but that doesn't mean everything he does is good.
Mm. Yeah. Like, overall, good.
Making Colonel Manton say run away, I think he's justified, mm-hmm. but I don't think that's a good thing to do.
Yeah, it is a little vindictive.
It depends whether you say that the actions of someone reflect their character entirely.
Mm-hmm. I believe they do. I think the only thing that matters is how someone acts. I don't believe that someone's internal thoughts matter if they don't come out in actions.
He's a silent guardian. A watchful protector. A doctor.
But yeah, that's my personal philosophy.
Mm.
Yeah, I can see that. I also think with regards to the second question, I'm not sure you can ever class something as a war if it takes 3 minutes and 42 seconds.
Oh, no, it's a really quick war.
There was a war between Britain and a different country that lasted like 38 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
So wars have been that short.
Wow.
I feel like, I don't know what the technical definition of a war is, but I feel like this probably doesn't fit it.
Yeah,
but
it's a battle more than anything. Like, nothing happens outside of this one building / asteroid.
Can I just say, Vastra goes, demons run his arse without a drop of blood spilt, and
jinxed it.
From a literal point of view, that is true. But at the same time, the headless monks did kill soldiers during that whole thing. So,
I mean, no, but they didn't spill any blood.
That's why I said from a literal point of view.
I would dispute the literal point of view as well, because when she poisons that guard who's trying to, raise the alarm, that had to have gone into his bloodstream, so surely blood has come out. I feel like...
I mean,
I didn't know they poisoned it. I thought they just gave him the whiplash or something.
I assume it's the same thing that happened in the Hungry Earth.
I mean, in the Hungry Earth, though, there's no blood. Like, we see the injury, it just sort of goes green.
I can't remember the Hungry Earth. I must have watched it
at least once. It's a Chibnall episode.
Yeah. Is that the one that takes place in 2020?
Yeah. The near future, much like 2012.
Yeah. And then weirdly has a future version of Amy and Rory that we never revisit.
I don't have an issue with that just because I'm like, the whole point is time can be rewritten.
I guess, yeah. I just feel like it's a weird thing to add.
Yeah, that is fair.
Anyway, not a Hungry Earth episode.
Yet.
Martin wants to know, would your flesh avatar go on a murderous rampage? No, because I am not murderous. Mm. So I think I wouldn't... The flesh version is me, so also wouldn't murder.
I think it purely depends on how you treat the flesh avatar version of me.
Yeah. I mean, how would you treat the flesh avatar version of yourself?
I personally would treat myself quite well, but if you have people like Amy and Cleves, then I probably could be pushed into a murderous rampage.
Understandable.
It's obviously circumstantial, but I don't think I can speak on behalf of my flesh avatar self.
But the point is, your flesh avatar is literally you.
I think if I just start ordering it around, say, okay, can you please do this, can you do that, you'll get fed up and be like, right, murder time!
I feel like I wouldn't do that.
I'm not gonna.
The thing is,
those dishes need to be done.
You need to think of it from the point of view.
And because of that, you kill them.
If you were the flesh avatar, what would you do? Because the point is, it literally is you. It's not a different version of you. It is just you.
You just hang out, you know, just sort of watch stuff together.
Vibe,
yeah. Bit different.
But where would he sleep?
I mean, I'm sure that we can just take turns getting a sleeping bag. You know
what you mean? So. While one works, the other sleeps, and vice versa.
Or just take turns in the bed and one sleeping on the floor.
Yeah,
or just
top and tail. Meaning, yeah. Top and tail, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. that is all the questions we've got. That wraps up this episode.
Have we got the Discord questions?
Yes.
Okay.
That was all but one of those questions were Discord questions.
All but one. All but one.
Oh, did you ask a question?
Well, we did get a question.
Is anyone in the podcast studio a ganger?
Neither allowed to confirm nor deny this accusation.
Oh.
I plead the fifth.
I am a ganger.
You've got to die now. I've got a glorified catapult here.
Oh,
she's
going to
kill you. Anyway.
Short for doppelgang. I can't keep calling myself... the person who I originally was now.
Anyway, it's goodbye from me, Ollie. Goodbye from Willow.
Goodbye.
Lottie.
I'm dead.
And Louie.
I'm alive.
And next week is Rogue Tech Week. It's Louis' week. This week was my week, by the way. I didn't mention that. This week was my episode that I chose. Next week is Louis' episode he chose. It's Rogue Tech Week with the War Machines and I forgot the other one.
Bells of St. John.
Bells of St. John. Bye-bye. See you
Bye.
Then.
Purple Radio
Podcasts. Thanks for downloading this Purple Radio podcast. For more great content and to listen live, head to purpleradio.co.uk.